Welcome to the Eden Podcast, where we true the verse of Genesis 3:16, and we discover that God didn't curse Eve or Adam or limit woman in any way.
Welcome to today's episode of the Eden Podcast. I'll be your host today. My name is Christy Fleming Gudim. I am Joy and Bruce Fleming's daughter. And we have with us returning as a guest, Mike Davis. Hi, Mike. Thanks for joining
us. Hi, Christy. Glad to be back.
We're happy to have you back. You're becoming a regular with us.
Yeah, I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah, well, we love hearing your insights and your journey. Mike Davis is a pastor of the Oasis in Southern mm-hmm. California. You've been married 35 years. You've got three adult children and a handful of grandchildren as
yes.
well. I know they're important to you and in your life.
Those are the important things in my life, yes.
Yeah, those are the main points. Yeah, and we've enjoyed hearing from you on other episodes about your journey to just walk through the Bible verse by verse, chapter by chapter. And you've ended up doing a lot of studying about women and men mm-hmm. in the Bible. And you've kind of come to some of the same conclusions as us at the True 316 Foundation. So today we wanted to ask you to talk with us about a woman in the Old Testament whose story is rather remarkable.
Yes.
And as we were just saying before we started, she's not even given a name. It's not even mentioned. And so I wasn't really familiar with this story. Maybe I've read it before or heard mm-hmm. someone talk about it. But when you brought it up the other day, I thought, I don't even know who we're referring to. So I had to go read the story. And should we just jump right in? Should I
yes.
read the passage? Okay.
Okay.
All right, so this is from 2 Samuel 20. I'm going to read from the New Revised Standard Version. And 2 Samuel 20, verses 14 to 22. So here's the story. And if you wanted to say, Mike, you were going to, maybe do you want to set up who Sheba was?
Yeah. So Sheba was an ancient Israelite. He had revolted against David, trying to basically the overthrow of the kingdom. And David's general, Joab, goes after him. And they end up at this town called Abel Bet Ma'acha, where he had tried to run for refuge. And they are going to, David's general is coming up against the city in order to retrieve this guy. They're about to destroy the city just to get this one guy.
Yeah, yeah. So here's what it says. Sheba passed through all the tribes of Israel to Abel of Beth Macha, and all the Bichrites assembled and followed him inside. Joab's forces came and besieged him in Abel of Beth Macha. Says they threw up a siege ramp against the city, and it stood against the rampart. Joab's forces were battering the wall to break it down. Then a wise woman called from the city, "Listen, listen, tell Joab, come here, I want to speak to you." He came near her, and the woman said, "Are you Joab?" He answered, "I am." Then she said to him, "Listen to the words of your servant." He answered, "I'm listening." Then she said, "They used to say in the old days, let them inquire at Abel. And so they would settle a matter. I am one of those who are peaceable and faithful in Israel. You seek to destroy a city that is a mother in Israel. Why will you swallow up the heritage of the Lord?" Joab answered, "Far be it from me. Far be it that I should swallow up or destroy. That is not the case. But a man of the hill country of Ephraim, called Sheba, son of Bichri, has lifted up his hand against King David. Give him up alone, and I will withdraw from the city." The woman said to Joab, "His head shall be thrown over the wall to you." Then the woman went to all the people with her wise plan, and they cut off the head of Sheba, son of Bichri, and threw it out to Joab. So he blew the trumpet, and they dispersed from the city, and all went to their homes, while Joab returned to Jerusalem to the king. There we go.
Yeah. So this is one of my favorite stories. It's become one of my favorite stories. When I was doing the series, in which we're still doing it at our fellowship, called Who's the Boss? Women and Men in Biblical and Cultural Context, I came across the story, and I started studying the background. And I found it interesting, especially when I was dealing with what I call the patriarchal principle.
Okay.
And the patriarchal principle basically is what undergirds complementarian thinking, that men are supposed to be the leaders, women are supposed to follow that leadership, and never are women to lead men, or that's not the way it's supposed to go. So men are always the leaders. But when you read this story and other stories, you find that that patriarchal principle just doesn't hold up. That we do now, this is a patriarchal time period during this time when this is being written. However, what we see here is that this woman is operating in a position of leadership. So here you have Joab, David's general. He's coming to besiege the city just to get this one person. They're getting ready to break down the wall. And it is this woman who comes to the wall and calls out to him and says, "I want to speak to Joab. Tell Joab to come near." And Joab comes.
One, I mean, if I were him, I'd be thinking, is this a trap? Is
Exactly.
there something behind this? Is she setting me
Yes.
up for something?
Yeah, because it's very dangerous doing a siege for you to approach the wall, because you could be we actually have a story in Judges where I think it's Abimelech or him Abimelech gets killed by a woman from the wall. And I believe Joab actually references this at one point. But he comes to this woman, and what's interesting, she says, "You know, I want to speak to you." And he says, "Okay, speak." He doesn't say, "Well, where are the men? Where are the elders of the city?" He doesn't ask for any man to come. He listens to this woman. And the Bible refers to her as a wise woman. And based on the research that I've done, it appears that this may have been an actual term or an official position, a technical term or official position within the ancient world.
Oh, really?
In earlier, it talks about, I believe it's Joab who calls for a wise woman of Tekoa. She's called a wise, this woman here, we don't know her name, but she's called a wise woman. And it's also set within some stories of wise women. So you have earlier the wise woman of Tekoa. Later on, you have the story of Abigail, the wife of Nabal. She is called a woman of understanding. And it says she's beautiful. And I always like to say it put forth that she was wise first, then she was beautiful. So
Interesting.
she's also a, so you see these women acting and being called upon to act in wisdom. And here you see this woman, she is the one who comes to the wall. It's not any of the elders of the city, the male elders of the city. It is this woman. She is speaking on behalf of the city.
Yeah, you would think she's not got the authority to say, we'll do this
Right.
of her own accord, unless she's someone of authority.
Exactly. And that's the other thing is that she's in negotiation with Joab. And this is a military campaign.
Good point.
And this is a woman who is negotiating with the general of the army. Now, the Bible doesn't tell us that the men were afraid. The Bible doesn't tell us that the men of Abel Beth Maaca, that they were cowardly. Doesn't say anything about that. It just simply says it referenced the point she is a wise woman and she is the one speaking with Joab and she makes a negotiation with him. But first of all, it says that she cries out, "Hear, hear, please tell Joab to come near." He does come. So that's interesting, is that he does respond to her, which suggests to me that he may recognize her place and her position in the city, the fact that he would actually talk with her. He doesn't rebuff her. He doesn't say, you know, I'm gonna be a little bit facetious here. He doesn't say, "Go home, where are the men?" He doesn't do that.
And you would think that if there was no precedence for women to have a position of authority or influence,
Right.
that he would have given her the time of day.
Right. Why talk to her at all? Why talk to her at all? And then she says to him, "They used to talk in former times, saying," this is verse 18. And I'm reading New King James, "they shall surely seek guidance at Abel, and so they would end disputes." She quotes to him a proverb. This is a proverb. Now, according to one scholar, the reason you would quote a proverb is to educate another person. That's one of the reasons you would do it. Another reason is to exert influence over another person's actions. And that's one thing that we see with these wise women. These are women who are able to speak persuasively in such a way that they are able to effect certain results. So she quotes a proverb to him and she says, "Listen, we are known for being able to settle disputes. This is what Abel is known for." And she makes the statement, and she said, "You know, people would come to us, they would send people to resolve disputes." So evidently, this is a town that is known for that. And she says, "Are you going to destroy the Lord's heritage?" And she also makes the statement, she said, you seek to destroy a city and a mother in Israel. There's a little bit of question as to when she says a mother in Israel, is she talking about herself or the city? It could go either way, because there are times women who were respected, who were considered elderly, they could be called mothers in Israel. So
Oh,
she may
that's
have been talking
interesting.
to, yeah, she could have been talking about herself.
I was reading last night this passage in the New Living Translation, and I mean that's more of a figurative than literal translation, but they didn't even use the expression a mother in Israel. So reading it today in the RSV, I was like, oh, okay, it's a term I didn't even hear in this passage last night.
She's a and she probably is considered I would say she's probably considered a mother in Israel. I wouldn't quibble about it either way, but she makes this proverb in order to influence Joab, and it works because she says, "Are you going to destroy the heritage of the Lord?" He goes, "No, far be it." And he repeats it twice for emphasis. "Far be it, far be it. No. That's not what we're going to do." So, number one, you see, this is why this woman comes out. She's able to speak persuasively to this general. But again, I want to emphasize she is female, and this is a time of war. And she is the one who is speaking persuasively. And this is not to put down any of the men, but it's not any of the men. So this idea that, well, only men lead and women have to follow that lead, this is a woman who's in the lead where the city is concerned. And so Joab explains what happens to her. And
Can I
yes, go ahead.
interject a thought?
At any
Okay,
time.
as you say that too, I'm like, not only is she leading, but what I like is that she's able to lead as with her femininity. Like she's not having to act or be a man or step outside of her gender to do so. She is still being persuasive, using her language, but she doesn't have to be like a man. She's not, I mean, we don't know that she's like, we don't have any reason to think she's a soldier or, carrying what would have been any of the masculine roles of soldier or military personnel either. But without having to become like a man, she's still able to be persuasive. That feels significant to me.
In the book of Proverbs, we're told, a soft answer turns away wrath, and that people of wisdom, especially within the courts of a king, they could influence. So, like you're saying, this is what we see. This woman here, she holds some, in my opinion, and based upon the scholarship I've read, she holds some significant authority that, and they trust her that she is able to function and operate in such a way. Like you said, she's not being a man. To me, this is it harkens back to the story, doesn't relate to this, but it gets me to thinking about that. In the book of Genesis, chapter one, God gives to men and women equal authority, what I call equal functional authority. They both have authority and dominion in the earth that they are to exercise together. This seems that this is what this woman is doing here. She's operating in wisdom. The book of Ecclesiastes talks about that there was a poor man in a town, and this great king came against this town, and the poor man delivered the town by his wisdom. And it says, wisdom is better than weapons of war. Here we see this woman delivering the town by her wisdom. And she's speaking to another man who respects her, who listens to what she has to say. So here's a woman, she's operating. There are no other men around, though I would assume that the town has commissioned her to go and speak. She's speaking on their behalf. And what I really like is when Joab explains to her what has happened, he talks about Sheba, and he says, he's raised his hand against David, deliver him only, and I will depart from the city. The wise woman does not say, let me go check with the rest of the men of the city to find out what they want to do, and I'll get back to you. She
Let me
doesn't
see
do
if they,
that.
let me see if they're okay with this plan.
Let me
I'll
see if
let you
they're okay
know.
with that. She immediately says, watch, his head will be thrown to you over the wall. She makes the decision about what is going to be done
On the spot.
on the spot. And it says that then it says in my New King James, then the woman in her wisdom
Wow.
went to all of the people. One scholar has suggested that this means that she went to them in her official capacity. That again, that this may have been a position, a recognized position. And again, the fact that they, to me, that speaks that it may have been that because of the fact that, number one, they sent her out there. She's the only one speaking to Joab. She makes the decision. We don't see anyone interrupting her going, hey, wait, we got to vote on this.
Good point.
They just and the next thing we read is that she went to all the people, they cut off the head, and they threw it over the wall. They immediately responded to what she said, which means they took her advice, they took her counsel, the decision she made, and they went with it. There was no discussion. There was no prolonged discussion. It says that she went to them and they cut off Sheba's head. I mean, it's pretty gruesome there. But the point that I'm making here is that this was a woman who was listened to. And she
Yeah.
was a that the leaders, where I'm assuming that there are male elders in the city, which is normally what we would read, the men of the city came or the elders of the city. If they are there, they all listened to her. No one contested her decision that she made without checking with any of them.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
And
Yeah.
Joab accepts it, and they go on the way. And once again, we see that this woman, like it says in the book of Ecclesiastes, of the poor old man, this wise woman of Abel Beit Maacha, she delivers them through her wisdom. So I think this again, it shows not that it is promoting women over men. It shows that, and as
Yeah.
several scholars I read, that in this was at the beginning of the monarchy in Israel. When you had a lot of towns and villages, they were still operating with local leaders. She was a local leader with the men in the town. They're functioning together. I don't see how, in any other way, anyone could read this and say this woman was equal in leadership to the men. I don't think that can be denied, because everything about this story shows her, she is the one in the lead. She is the one making the decisions. She is the one that Joab is listening to.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, and so she is the one who's operating, and what that would suggest to me is that she's operating. I'll put it like this: that we have here more of what I would call the original model that God intended in Genesis 1, that men and women function together. Here, it appears that her gift is she's very persuasive. There's often this discussion sometimes within the complementarian and egalitarian debate. It's like, well, egalitarians would say, hey, leadership should be based upon gifts and talents. It seems like here, that is exactly what is happening. She has the gift, she has the talent. We have to ask the question, why are there no men? And again, the text does not tell us that the men were afraid. The text doesn't say that they were cowards. It just says that she's the one, and it specifically refers to her as a wise woman. One scholar even said that maybe the reason that her name is not mentioned, I would have loved to know what her name was, but maybe the reason that her name is not mentioned is, number one, they wanted to focus on the fact that she's a wise woman. Number two, we're also not given any explanation as to what a wise woman is,
Yeah, that's interesting too.
which suggests that for the original readers, they knew what a wise woman
Oh,
was.
sure.
They already knew. So they didn't need an
It
explanation. They
didn't need a
knew.
definition.
They didn't need a
It
definition.
was an
And if you're,
understood term by everyone.
and probably again, if what some of the scholars have, a couple of scholars that I've read have said that this was probably again, it could have been something of a semi official or an official position. That she was operating within the town. She was someone known for her wisdom, and that she could, which means that not only that, it's not just that she's smart, she's able to get results.
Sure. Yeah.
And we see this in her interaction with Joab,
Well, she saved the whole city by
the
getting the
entire city.
outcome she set out for.
Exactly. So this says to me that when we look back to the Old Testament text, and this is a time of patriarchy,
Yeah.
that it's set in, but we see this woman operating with authority. We see her operating in leadership. We
Yeah.
see her operating in wisdom in order to bring about a specific result for the benefit of her village. And so that says to me that we should look at it and go, hey, this idea of that women can't lead, that they always have to be in subordination to men, that men are alone the leaders. Men lead, what I call the patriarchal principle. Men lead, women submit to and follow that lead, and women do not lead over men. We see that this woman is the one who's in the position of leadership. And again, Joab, he listens to her, he responds to her. He even, when she says, tell him to come near, he does that. And really, in a time of war, do you really want to come near a city, a wall that you're besieging? Because he could be killed. He puts himself in a vulnerable position.
Which
And
means
he,
he had a reasonable amount of belief that she was
Yes.
trustworthy,
Yes.
yeah, and was worth listening to and potentially negotiating with.
And he probably knew something about Abel Bet Maacha, because when she begins to explain, he goes, "Oh, far be it, far be it. This town had a reputation." Oh, and she also makes the statement, and it can be kind of missed. My translation says, "I am among the peaceable and faithful in Israel." Another translation says, "I am a peacemaker."
Yes, that's the one I read last night. I'm a
Yeah,
peacemaker.
I'm a peacemaker, which again suggests that this is a woman that people would come to get disputes resolved. We know that the town itself has a reputation among Israel as a place where you can go to get your disputes resolved. She appears to be among the leaderships that helps to resolve that.
Okay, so I'm glad you said that because I have a question for you. And it was
Yes.
just formulating in my head in the last couple of minutes. And it ties in well with what you said. I thought, okay, so we're seeing an example in Old Testament Israel, King David's era, of a woman who appears to have social leadership position recognized by at least the whole town, if not more. Joab recognizes it, and he's not even from that town. However, would someone from, well, if I don't love using different terms like complementary and putting people in boxes,
Yeah.
but would someone from that mindset and that camp, so to speak, look at this passage and say, okay, well, it's descriptive of a circumstance, but it's not prescriptive of God's order. You know, that's not just because that's the story in the Bible doesn't necessarily mean that that's God's intent for women. You know, what would you say to someone with that perspective or question?
One, I would say that that's coming with a presupposition of what the order is, which
Okay.
I would argue against. You're presupposed, which is what I call the patriarchal principle again. You're presupposing that the order is that men are supposed to lead. And what I would argue is, when we go back to, as your dad has done, as your mom has done, you go back to Genesis chapter one, you see men and women, they are called to lead together. What always gets me with those who have that mindset, and what I mean what gets me, what surprises me, is they will look at Genesis one, where it
You mean
says,
Genesis 2 and 3?
well, first of all, Genesis one,
Okay.
where in Genesis one, where God says, "Let us make mankind in our image and our likeness." And he made male and female, and he gave them authority and dominion. It doesn't say he gave the male authority and dominion. It says he gave them
Them.
equally together. They have authority and dominion over the same areas of domain, the animals and the earth. Whenever I've heard that passage interpreted, it is interpreted as, well, yeah, they're created in the image and likeness of God. They have the same ontological value, which I agree with, but what's left out is not only do they have the same ontological value, they have the same functional authority. One is not, God doesn't say, okay, you're both equal in value, but Adam, you're a little bit more equaler because you're the male. He doesn't say that. And if we see Genesis 2, when God, we get a little bit more detail about how the creation was made. And so we have Adam created, and then we have Eve created out of his side. If we see that God creates them, and then he says to them, okay, now you're to have dominion over the earth, he doesn't put one in charge of the other. So I would argue that, to argue that because Eve was created second, that means she is subordinate to the man. I said, that's not the point of the story.
I was just about to make that comment too. I was going to say, well, some people would say he made Adam first, he gave him the mandate, and then said, oh, it's not good for him to be alone, and added the woman later. So she's like, you know, the subordinate helper to him. And it's like, well, if you want to follow that logic, he created the animals first and kept going higher in authority to the human kind, you know, last. And so if you're following that logic, then you would have to follow it through to, well, the woman was made last as the pinnacle, as the higher authority, if you're following that logic. And we don't think that's true.
Well, and the other thing that I came to see, I've meditated a lot on Genesis 1 and 2. When you look at the story in Genesis, this is why I do not believe, and I don't presuppose, that Adam was supposed, the man is in charge and the woman just follows the lead. When you look in Genesis 2, God creates the man, right? And then God says, it is not good for man to be alone. I used to, some of the work I used to do, we used to help people with processes in their companies. And one of the things we would always do is define the problem statement. We say, you got to define the problem, Because if you don't define the problem carefully, you will end up applying a solution that doesn't really work.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
God defines the problem in Genesis 1. He says, it is not good for man to be alone. That's the problem. He does not say, it is not good that man does not have anyone to rule over.
Ooh.
He does not say, it is not good that man has no one to lead. He does not say, it is not good that man has no one to protect, provide for, and lead and show them the way. He doesn't say any of that. He said, it is not good for man to be alone. So then what does he do to resolve the problem? He brings the animals, and there is not found among the animals a help that is meet. Because God says, I'm going to make a help that is meet for him to solve what problem? Man being alone. Not to solve the problem of, I don't have any, man has no one to rule over. That is
He
not
was
what
already
God
ruling
says.
over the animals.
Yes, and that's the other point. So when God, it says that God brought the animals and he created the animals out of the earth. In Genesis chapter 1, what is man told that he is mankind? They're told to rule over two things, the animals and the earth. That is what man is supposed to rule over. In Genesis 2, God forms the animals from the earth. So God forms from the earth that man is to rule over, animals that man is to rule over. And there was not found among that which man is to rule over, there was not found a help meet for him. Okay? So when God creates Eve, does he create Eve from among the animals? No. Does he create Eve from the earth?
No, which Adam
No.
was made from?
So Eve is not created from anything that man is supposed to rule over.
Interesting. That's
She
a
is
very
created
interesting.
from his side,
Yeah, a true partner. She.
which harkens back to Genesis 1 when they are created and God says to the man and woman, you together are to rule over the earth. So Eve is not created from anything that humankind is supposed to rule over. And again, this is why I reject the premise that because she was created second, therefore, this is one of the reasons I reject the premise that Adam is to lead, he is to rule over her. She is not created because, again, number one, the problem is not that man doesn't have anything to rule over because we know he has something to rule over. He has the
Yeah.
animals, he has the earth. Number
Yeah.
two, God does not say the problem is man doesn't have anything to rule over. God says he is alone. That's what's not good. And so God creates a help, and I like to say a resourceful person who is able to come alongside him to fulfill the divine mandate that was given.
And
So she is a
together they
help,
rule better.
and together they rule better. So if someone was to say to me, well, it's not prescriptive, it's just descriptive, I would go, yes, but it's descriptive of the way God originally intended it to be.
That's great. That is a great full circle. I love that. Thank you. Love that.
Welcome.
Well, this has been a fun chat.
Oh,
What do you think, Mike? Should we have you back again?
I would love to come back again. I
Let's
love
do
this. This is fun.
it. Me too. This is really fun. I love it, geeking out over this stuff. Thank you, Mike, for taking
Thank
time
you.
to share the story and bring it to our attention because even I was not really aware of this story in 2 Samuel 20. And
She's one of my favorite female leaders in the Bible, and
I
she
love
doesn't
that.
get a lot of press.
Yeah, no, she does not get a lot of press. I've grown up in circles where I've not heard of it, but I've grown up in circles where I've heard about a lot of things in the Bible. So that really says she doesn't get a lot of press. Well, we'll have you back again, Mike.
Great.
Thanks so much for being here
Thank you,
today.
Christy.
You've been listening to this episode of the Eden Podcast. You can find us at true316.com, TRU316.com. True316 Foundation is the home of the Eden Podcast. Join us for $3.16 a month or more. Let's chew the verses on the key passages on women and men. Go to true316.com/partner.
I'm Dr. Joy Fleming, co-founder of the True316 Foundation. We mention many great books on the Eden Podcast. We are making them available to you for purchase on our website at true316.com/truebooks. That's true316.com/TRUBOOKS. These books are by our own True316 authors, such as Bruce and myself, and by our guests on the Eden Podcast. By purchasing these books on true316.com, the True316 Foundation will be helped with a small commission. and the authors will benefit directly from the sales. We add titles regularly to our site, so check today and do some shopping at true316.com/trubooks. true316.com/truebooks.
True 316 is strengthening and encouraging many, and we're getting stories every day of lives changed through our ministry. We're the home of the Eden podcast, and we're getting the word out that God didn't curse Eve or Adam or limit woman in any way. Our volunteer help is wonderful, and we grow stronger with each new True partner who gives to the True 316 Foundation so that we can cover the costs to do the technical work of the Eden podcast, to coordinate our True School workshops like the two-week Eden workshop on Genesis 2 and 3, and to make the True 316 Foundation function in its outreach to scholars and students around the world. You can give now with a one-time gift. And better still, you can join now and become a monthly donor. We call our monthly donors our True Partners. Please join now by going to true316.com/partner.